Hey friends, we wanted to take a quick minute and personally invite you to two really special gatherings coming this fall. First, our intentional motherhood retreat in Portland, Oregon, October 15th through the 17th, and then our intentional fatherhood retreat in Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Honestly, these retreats have become so much more than events for us. They've become spaces where people encounter God, experience healing, honesty, friendship, freedom, and real transformation. We live in a world that is full of information. We have podcasts, books, content, advice, but transformation requires more than information. Sometimes you need space, you need community, you need honesty, you need the presence of God, and you need to get around other people who are fighting for the same things you are. At these events, we've watched marriages soften again. We've watched fathers come out of hiding. We've watched mothers breathe deeply again. We've watched people feel seen, known, challenged, and deeply encouraged. And we would genuinely love for you to join us. You can learn more and grab tickets at intentionalparents.org. And for all things fatherhood, you can visit intentionalfatherhood.org. We hope to see you there. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Kids with ADHD. We've recently did an episode about adults with ADHD. Diane and I shared a lot of our story and, you know, late diagnosis and understanding it and what it means. And honestly, it was really encouraging to hear the feedback from that. Couple social media posts just had their little mini viral moments. Because I think this is one of those topics that is really pertinent to our moment. I know there's still a whole host of people that believe it's not real, that it's a made up thing. Oh yeah, that's a whole thing. Yeah, Diane's in real time learning this. Yeah, like it's a whole made up deal. And again, it doesn't actually matter to us where you land on that opinion. If you don't think people have ADHD and it's a made up thing, you probably won't listen to this episode anyway. So great, no problem. But for whatever reason, if you find yourself in that place and you understand it more and it's making sense of your reality and you are learning about yourself, but also your kids, we want to talk specifically about kids with ADHD. Before we do that, I want to say thank you again to everyone who's rated, subscribed, left a comment. Also, just a reminder that we do this on YouTube. So you can watch all this. There's a lot of people, I don't know if you guys know this, that will watch these episodes. And I think that's so fun that they do. And I don't watch podcasts, but I listen to them. But I think it's a great idea. It's a great idea. So please subscribe even over there. And if you like the video, give it a thumbs up. It's really helpful. And lastly, we have events going on. Go check out our website, intentionalparents.org or Intentional Fatherhood. We have new seasons of the fatherhood episodes are coming out, or seasons of the podcast there are coming out. And then also we have events. We have our motherhood retreat in October. In Portland, Oregon. And then we have our fatherhood retreat in November in Austin, Texas, which is just really fun. We're really excited about both of those. And so moms get tickets for that. Fathers get tickets for that. Let's talk about this. ADHD is not simply a behavioral problem, a discipline problem, a motivation problem. It's completely different. Elizabeth, why don't you start us today? This is a lot of our story. That's why I'm handing it to you. Yeah. This is a lot of our life and story.
I think we've said this when we talked about anxiety, and we'll just say it again about ADHD. We are not experts.
We are not professionals on this.
We are not psychiatrists or psychologists, although sometimes my family does say I'm trying to be one.
It's because you keep trying to diagnose us. You're going around like, guess what you have?
But we are absolutely practitioners.
Yeah.
All four of our kids, and they are very open about it, but all four of our kids have diagnosed ADHD. We've got all the different forms and kinds represented in our house. And so this has been something we have been really steeped in for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I am definitely of the bent of just advocacy and learning. And we're going to talk deeper about this, but about what does it look like to steward the kids that God's given us. And really, it is us stewarding how they're made, how they're wired, how their brains work, how their bodies were made, and it's stewarding their stories, the relationships they have, the hurts that they have, and it's helping them walk through life in a way that hopefully leads to flourishing and wholeness and health in it, the whole person. And so that's why we're talking about this, because it's not just a theological thing. It's a, if God's given you kids under your care and your authority and your responsibility, part of that is understanding how they're wired and getting them whatever help they might need to flourish in the world that we inhabit. Mm-hmm. And it was funny, one of the clips that like went viral, so they say, got a lot of traction was me sharing something that our child psychologist or psychiatrist had shared of, essentially that, you can go find the clip, but essentially that if you were raising your kids who have ADHD in the Amazon rainforest, you would never be sitting in my office. You would never be looking for an ADHD diagnosis because it would actually be something that was incredibly helpful to them to survive that environment. And
it's amazing how many people also just left stupid comments on that.
I know, I'm like, getting to that.
Oh, sorry.
I'm getting to that.
Yeah, well, it's fun. It's just fun to hear saying, what like, the internet feels.
ADHD is, essentially, she was saying, ADHD is not a problem. It's that we're trying, it's a type of brain that doesn't work great in our westernized culture. And it was funny because this, you get one clip, one part of a conversation and
out of context,
quite mostly, a few people don't romanticize ADHD. It's really hard. To which I would say, absolutely. It's super hard. And in no way am I romanticizing it by saying it can be a superpower in some settings. It, in our cultural context, it is, it's very difficult. It's hard on relationships. It's hard in practicality. And there are also, there's quite a spectrum of how much it can impact a person. For some, it's very mild. For some, it is like truly a disability, something that is really difficult. And so, again, back to stewardship, our job is to help figure out who our kids are and how they're wired. And so that's why we're talking about this. And it's deeply personal to us, all three of us.
All three of us.
But to us as parents. And I think, Mom, now you would say, looking back, like this was not very, very few. No, I wouldn't say very few were getting diagnosed. Well, you tell me. At the time of you raising all of us, were parents talking about this very much? Because you've said like there were things you now see in some of us kids that you would have probably pursued with a doctor.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even one of them I brought to our pediatrician at the time. And he adamantly said, no, 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 this isn't ADHD. He knew Phil. So he said, this is just like Phil. He's just, you know, fidgety. To now we look and say, well, maybe there was more to it than that. You know, yes. So even pediatricians were not well versed in this, unless maybe in extreme circumstances and sadly, very much in Christian schools. When you were little, Christian schools were just coming to the forefront because public schools were beginning to teach anti-God, anti-gospel. Yeah. The rise in Christian schools that in that early rise of them were super academic. Like they had something they had to prove that they could do better than the public schools academically. And so lots of kids were recognized as not being able to sit still. Even when developmentally we knew kids are not supposed to be sitting still.
Yeah.
And put on high levels of very strong medications, which left them as zombies. So rightly, a bunch of parents, myself included, were looking and saying, I'm not going to do that to my child so that they can sit still for a whole day in a classroom at 5 years old. So there was an anti, and there was this sense of we don't want to label our children, which I still hear. But this is not about labeling. This is really about discovering. How did God make the, we know he made him fearfully. We know he made him wonderfully. So let's get inside. Let's use this understanding we now have of the way the brain works. It's beautiful. It's coming as a gift from God. And let's understand this child so that we can direct him for the rest of his life in a way, in the way that he should go.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about, I think this is important for anyone that's listening that's still kind of like in that space of like, well, I'm trying to understand exactly what this is. I think we should just quickly, Elizabeth, why don't you just explain, simple explanation, what is ADHD?
Yeah, so I'm actually just going to read the same definition that we read on the adult ADHD episode that we did, because I just think it's really clear and helpful. I think we'll probably put it in the show notes too, but it's just this. ADHD is a neurodevelopmental condition that affects attention, regulation, impulse control, emotional regulation, motivation, memory, and executive functioning. It is not an intelligence issue or a character flaw. It is a brain-based difference in how someone processes and manages information, tasks, emotions, and stimulation. Many kids and adults with ADHD are highly creative, intuitive, energetic, and capable, but they often struggle in systems that weren't built for how their brain works. And I just love that definition. And again, this is not romanticizing the fact that ADHD is difficult in how they process information and tasks and emotions. Emotional regulation is harder. Executive functioning skills can be significantly harder. That is all true. But I think it's so tricky with our kids because we can put all sorts of seeming behaviors in these categories of, well, they just don't have self-control. It's a character issue, or it's a lack of intelligence because they're struggling in school, or it's laziness, or it's defiance, or a lack of effort. And please hear me. Sometimes that is the case. We are all human. Your kids are going to struggle with all of those things at times. But ADHD is tricky because sometimes it can look like those things. But if we parent it as if it is simply that, and there's something deeper going on, we actually end up doing a lot of harm, which is what we don't want to do. So hopefully that...
Well, it helps, but can I set up a verse for this?
Yeah.
This is that, and we made the note here, but Colossians 3 is still one of my favorite chapters in all the Bible because it is so comprehensive in what it covers, by the way. So if you're looking for a favorite chapter, you can take mine. But Colossians 3:21, and it specifically says fathers, but in other translations it says parents. So this is for both of you, but specifically in the NIV it says, fathers, do not embitter your children or they'll become discouraged. Mm. One of the ways we unintentionally exacerbate, is another translation, or embitter or hurt our children, is by just not understanding how they're actually made and what's actually going on. And there is so much in my own life and story, but even in my own parenting, where I look now and also look back and go, man, I was treating so many things as behavior based instead of treating them as understanding, like their brain works so different than mine, or even just developmentally, not understanding enough of where they're at developmentally and having maybe an angle of ADHD has been a really interesting thing to learn, to understand. And this is one of the ways we actually follow that verse, is by learning, by understanding, by recognizing, hey, this isn't just because they're not wanting to follow through or being lazy. I mean, truly, once we locked this in or figured this out, and it took a long time, even with our son, all the parts of him that we knew were there when he fully was able to be online, like, and these things were firing on all the cylinders at whatever a normal situation would be, whatever that even means anymore, it was amazing to see, like, his problem isn't following through. He's not lazy. He's not any of those things. He had all of this biology working against him. And once he was able to understand how that worked and how exercise and eating and maybe medication or these different things that he was adding to help him, it unlocked. I mean, it's like, oh, this is who we know you to be. And so it was just really interesting to understand, like, that is one of the ways that you actually fulfill that verse, and how you can actually, in many ways, do so much damage if you don't slow down and learn and understand.
Yeah.
And support. I mean, I think a child with ADHD in our school systems needs support. In our expectations, even in Sunday school, church is going to need a lot of support from mom and dad to be able to make them successful.
Absolutely.
And we're going to meet the expectations.
Yeah.
Or decide that those expectations are unrealistic and change this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to get into the to real like practical stuff like that, because that's actually where we want to focus a lot of this episode. But let's talk for a minute about just like what it can look like, because I think oftentimes, especially to somebody who maybe that doesn't know a lot about it, we think of like hyperactive, can't sit still, super easily distracted. And we can think that it's just that, but it actually can take on a lot of different forms and look like a lot of different things, which is why it can be confusing. Like our son was a late diagnosis because it was much more subtle for him and has become much more obvious actually in a high school setting.
Okay.
With just different pressures of life coming through. And so it can look like attention and executive function struggles, things like being really forgetful or losing things, or maybe like you gave them multi-step instructions about something. I need you to do this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. And they just can't remember. They literally forgot. Or maybe like this will often happen where you have a conversation, you think that it's sinking in. We talked about this on the last episode we did about it, where you think they've understood the instructions you just gave them, but it actually never like fully registered. And so you come back 3 hours later and nothing is done. And it's so easy to think, oh, they're just being lazy. They just didn't respect what I had to say.
Right.
But they genuinely forgot, or it didn't fully sink in. Yeah. It can look like just really struggling to organize either tasks or stuff in their room or things like that. So when it comes to an executive function piece, like it can take on a lot of different forms like that.
And one of those is that I think I saw in you kids was, and in myself, an ability to organize things. Mm-hmm. So you think they're capable. They can completely organize a room.
Mm.
And the inability to keep it organized.
Yeah.
That is also very typical ADHD that might be misunderstood by parents.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, for sure. This next one has been interesting to watch play out in our own home, but ADHD can actually really affect emotional regulation.
Big time.
Big time. I see this.
Okay, you want to talk about me?
I see it more in our girls.
Oh.
I
was ready for it. I was bracing.
Yeah. You know, No comment.
Well,
but they can be just have more frequent like outburst of frustration or like excessively crying over something. And you're like, what is really not that big of a deal? Why is this like high highs and low lows?
Yeah.
But the way our psychiatrist had described it is like big spikes, like a big burst of emotion and then coming back down to okay pretty quickly. It can look a lot like that, or just struggle to regulate those emotions where you're like, I feel like we should be getting to an age where that should be progressing a little bit and we're still a little bit stuck. We're still struggling. And again, this is what can be so tricky as a parent, because everything I'm describing is also just kids. Like,
yeah, that's the other thing I was just going to say, but the meltdowns after school, I'm the one having meltdowns after school because they're all home. And I'm just kidding. No, but to be fair, I can say as an adult, because I my brain hopefully is fully developed, although the jury's out. Some people still argue with me about that. I do think that I can say as an adult, this is how parts of it show up for me. The big emotions or the quick frustrations or the like, even rejection sensitivity. I think like you're not able to fully on your own. It doesn't, all the dots don't connect maybe in the way that they should. And then it creates all of these different frustrations. I'm learning how much, how even when you just start talking to me about details, I can't, like it's so overwhelming, because it's not that I don't want to talk to you, and it's not that I don't want to hear what you have to say, and it's not that those details don't matter. It's that if it's just talking to me about the details in a hope that I hold them, it's like, I know there's going to be a pop quiz later and I know I haven't studied. And that's what it feels like. It feels like it's coming and I don't know what, you know, and again, it's just learning more and more like, oh, that is actually one of the places where it causes, then I'll get really frustrated. But for so long, I didn't have language. We didn't have language for that.
No.
And I was just irritated, but I couldn't tell you why. But anyway.
Yeah. And overwhelm. I think overwhelm needs to be, for me, as a woman with ADHD, looking back in early motherhood, especially, how often I felt overwhelmed and then so ashamed. I shouldn't be overwhelmed. Mm. But it's very real because your brain, it's almost like your brain gets clogged up and flooded and frozen. And you need a minute to kind of unstick all of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, we need to be aware of that in our little girls who are very compliant, but all of a sudden these huge emotions come out because it's all been going on inside and they didn't know how to deal with it. And it's like a volcano that spews.
Yeah.
I agree. Well, and then there's hyperactivity and sensory seeking. You've got constant movement. For some, it's climbing. I mean, boys, a lot of boys just, or girls too, but just like constantly fidgeting, touching everything. Mm-hmm. I know adults like that actually too. Talking nonstop. I know that detail too.
Interrupting
frequently. Oh man, difficult sitting still. Needing constant stimulation. So again, those are like maybe the sensory hyperactivity or sensory seeking signs. And then school and social signs are interesting. And I think, again, that was kind of our learning part, our learning curve with Duke, was understanding like he's smart, but there's an academic struggle because it wasn't, it was just like certain details of time management and things that were not just showing up in a way that it was like the moment he could focus enough to do the work, it was like this, the problem isn't that you don't know the stuff or isn't that you aren't whatever smart means. Like you have the knowledge here. So that was really interesting. And again, the idea that we're trying to, why we're going through these details is just to hopefully give you a good idea of capturing where your kids might be. And again, it's not uncool or cool to have ADHD. So just don't go around just like hoping your kids like, oh, I know they have ADHD. Don't diagnose your kids. No. Don't diagnose yourself. Don't diagnose your spouse. Talk to a professional about this. We are not them. And don't think like, man, I bet you they have it. Like I see parents sometimes try to fit their kids into this to explain bad behavior. There is such a thing as just not actually parenting your kids. Raise your kids up in the way they should go. There's a raising element to kids and you have to actually train them and teach them. And so it's just a reminder that poor behavior or poor discipline or not even parenting is not mean that your kid has ADHD. This is why it takes such time and back and forth. And is this behavior, is
knowing
it not?
Knowing your kids, observing your kids. And then there are certain things that like with our son, he has the very classic combo of dyslexia and ADHD. Just the dyslexia diagnosis came first. 90% of kids with dyslexia also have ADHD. So when you're getting tested for dyslexia, you do a screening first for dyslexia and ADHD. And I remember calling the person who was doing it when I was filling it out. She was like, do you have any questions? And I was like, yeah, why did you give me an ADHD screening? Like, I don't think my son has ADHD. At the time, I didn't know the signs. I didn't know what to look for. And he has like mild inattentive ADHD. And so it wasn't super obvious. And then she explained that they are like comorbidities oftentimes. And sure enough, that's very much the case with him. And also if there's a parent or a grandparent, somebody in the family line that has ADHD, there is a strong likelihood that your kids will. And I'm sure we'll reference him quite a bit on the podcast because he's just a great resource. But Dr. Amen from Amen Clinics, I just saw something he had posted and he was explaining that when he's asking all the questions, trying to like figure out diagnoses, he's always looks to the parents first. And if he can't find it in the parents, then he immediately looks in the grandparents and other family members. But he said, I'm always looking at the family.
Okay.
Because if you are seeing it in the kids, you can find it in the family.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow, that's like, I didn't know any of that, especially even as our kids were first.
Oh, it's more genetic than eye color and hair color. Yeah. So let's talk about why this is important, especially for girls. I want to talk about
how it can look for girls.
Because it looks a little different with girls, and that's an important detail. And then I want to talk about the hidden costs of missing it. And then we want to talk about really some of the tools. That's where we're going to go. So let's just even highlight that, because I know the classic, maybe visual or picture a lot of people have is maybe a young boy in class fidgeting and moving all over the place. And that is a part of it. And for some, and again, we're not doctors, we're not psychologists. We're just practitioners in this with kids. But that is a way it shows up, but it is not the only way. And it sometimes doesn't even look like that at all. And to be noted. So maybe just highlight where this is for girls. And I know, Diane, this is going to be part of your experience too. So I'd love to hear.
I check every one of these.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you. Yeah, Elizabeth, walk through those.
I mean, I say yes for girls, but I'm even thinking of our son. Like he checks the box for these.
Well, it's not only girls, but what I'm saying.
I think for girls, it can definitely go under the radar because oftentimes it looks like anxiety. Mm-hmm. Or perfectionism, or like frequent emotional overwhelm, people pleasing. Oftentimes it is an internal chaos, mm-hmm. not just an external, like disruptive mm-hmm. behavior, but they might go more internal with mm-hmm. it. And so I think it can especially it's easier to spot in the rambunctious 5-year-old boy who's getting in trouble at school. It's much harder to spot, especially in this anxious generation where so many struggle with anxiety. Mm-hmm. The girl who's doing everything right, who's working really hard in school, who's getting straight A's, but is so anxious mm-hmm. Because she's having to work mm-hmm. so hard. So I just think it can look different.
You missed my favorite one.
Daydreaming.
That you wrote in the notes. Daydreaming.
Yes.
It's the girl looking out the window, making up stories, and mm-hmm. therefore you give her directions. And she says yes and really never heard you because she's in the middle of a story yeah. about mm-hmm. rescuing this horse that caught her.
I was just
going to
say, you and Birdie, I swear, you and Birdie are so aligned.
This is me. And
love that.
I mean, I think I think I was overlooked because I was the girl who did well in school as long as I knew exactly what was expected of me. And I was the one the teachers liked because I didn't talk in class, but inside the internal chaos went unrecognized. And I think we need to watch out for those girls because they may do really well in the outward signs of life, but on the inside, they're believing lies about themselves constantly. Yeah. And that's not what you want for your daughters.
Yeah.
And that's why I know I will say for us, this where we land is we land with diagnosing. Like diagnosis for us has been helpful. Mm. And honey, I'd love for you to talk about the hidden cost, but I'll just say for us, the why is really important. And you can differ with us, right? Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah.
We have friends that would maybe say like, why would you diagnose or why would you even, you know?
Don't speak that over them.
Like I don't believe that's how it works. Secondly, for us, understanding helps move from what's wrong with the child to what support does our child need to flourish. And so we're not trying to label them. And in many ways, labeling isn't the point. It's discovery of who you are, how you move through the world. And because of our situation with Birdie and special needs and the whole nine, we've found that giving her language around how her brain and body work and giving our kids language for us, and this has been our story only, I mean, we're not going to speak to other people. It has been incredibly helpful and grounding because it makes sense of the reality they're experiencing. When you say things like, let's not speak that over them. And then they're in the middle of the store as a 10 or 12 year old, literally on the ground, screaming, ripping their hair out. You go, well, how do we make sense of that one? Like, what do we do with that? What's going on there? What do you say to your kids? And so I think, again, it just brings dignity to what's actually going on. It makes sense of the reality of their life. And it helps your other kids with the family, like our other kids in our family with that. So.
And it helps them be honest with themselves. Yeah. To be able to say, you know, I really struggle with memorizing things. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I'm not intelligent, but because my brain has a little trouble hanging on to things. So I have to work harder. It's not an excuse. Yeah. It's a recognition that their friends may be able to do this quickly. Mm-hmm. They can memorize, but they're going to need some extra strategies and parental support to make that a reality.
Yes.
Because you want your kids to feel like they're smart in school, mm-hmm. that they're good at what they do. So giving them, I think an ADHD child in our culture, we're not in the Amazon rainforest, mm-hmm. in our culture is going to need really strongly well-trained, thoughtful skills built into their life that some kids will just accumulate naturally.
Yeah.
And I do really credit my parents for this. I feel like executive functioning skills were like, they didn't know Jesus when I was little, but they knew what it took to function in this world, and they made sure their kids were equipped with it.
Yeah.
And I am so grateful because some of my friends who have ADHD have not had those built in when they were young, and it could become almost structural to them.
Yeah.
And normal to them. So they're going to need that.
Yeah. I think that idea that there is a hidden cost to just saying, I don't want to label them. I don't, which is usually coming from a place of fear for a parent. And we fear what we don't know. So if you've never sat in the office of a really great practitioner, or you've sat in the office of a not great practitioner, and that's your only experience, it can be really easy to be like, well, I don't want that for my kid. I don't want them to feel different. I hear that argument a lot. I don't want to label them because I don't want it to become their identity, and I don't want them to feel different. But that idea of there's a hidden cost to that, and this, again, this is, we are practitioners of this. It is really easy to think in theory that that's how it works. Like if I just only celebrate them and never talk about their differences or their struggle, then they will never feel less than or different. But the reality is that is just simply not true, because our kids are smart. Our kids are so observant, and they are observing how other people are functioning in the world, how other people are doing in school. I will never forget the day our son came home in third grade and he said, Mom, I'm so stupid. And I just looked at him like, what in the world? Like,
well, I thought it was weird that you agreed with him. I was like, sweetie, you can't do that.
No, I was like, why are you saying that you're stupid? And he's like the master of these like word pictures.
Yeah,
and he said, when we're doing math, the whole class is like a jet engine. When the teacher asked a question, he's third grade, teacher asked a question, and the class just knows the answer and just jet engine. They understand what's happening. And then he said, and I'm like a Lockamora something, some other
Nakamura Lock, which is when he was super into paper airplanes. And there's this really particular type of paper airplane, which is a really good one. It's called the Nakamura Lock, which I guess is very hard to fold. This is how nerdy it got. A lot of YouTube videos for us, but I remember the name. He's like, I'm a, like a Nakamura Lock paper airplane.
And he was trying to highlight, I am behind. Like they know the answer and I don't for like several more minutes, you know? And he's observing this. He is very smart. At that point, we didn't know he had dyslexia. We didn't know he had ADHD. But he's at third grade observing, the class is understanding differently than I am. And his conclusion was, therefore, I am stupid. Yeah. So our kids are going to internalize that message. Yeah. I'm the kid who talks too much. I'm the kid who's loses my cool on the playground. I'm whatever. And they will always, that idea of a narrative void, like if we are not helping them make sense of what is happening, what they will tell themselves is, I am therefore lacking. I'm dumb. I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. So That's why we are such fans of getting answers and understanding, because you have the power as a parent to shift that voice and to be a very powerful, true voice. Mm-hmm. Not, no, you're not. You're fine. You are just like everybody else.
Like, but to no, be you're able, not. And they know it, and it's okay. Yeah. It's actually the best part about
but
them.
But to be able to say, like remembering details is super hard for you. It does not mean that you can't do it. Here's all the ways I'm going to help you build systems in your life. Yeah, school is going to be harder for you, but you want to know what you are? You are incredibly resilient. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you are passing all your classes, the fact that you have a good reputation with your teachers, that proves how resilient you are. Like, we get to shift that narrative if we as parents understand what's happening and can name it for our kids. Mm-hmm. And we can't rescue them from the struggle that ADHD will cause. Mm-hmm. ADHD does cause struggle. Mm-hmm. So there is no romanticizing it. It causes struggle, and it also causes them to be highly creative, be able to do careers that those without neurotypical brains could never do. And so we have the chance as parents to highlight the both and for them. And if we don't, it will be shaped by something else that is likely not true. And we're going to get to practical tools. But one more thing I'll say on that is I asked our psychiatrist about this when we were first just having a conversation for the first time about medication. And I was very skeptical. I was like very slow. Like I said, no, for a very long time. And we finally got into this highly recommended psychiatrist. And I just said, I was really honest with her. I'm uncomfortable with this whole thing, but I want to learn and I want to help my kids. And if this would be helpful, I'm willing to have a conversation. So I just said, I'd love to know, what's your take? Like, at what age do you like to bring medication on board? Like, I wanted to get a kind of pulse of like, are you wanting to medicate a 3-year-old or like, what's the deal here? And she just said something that I feel like was so helpful. She said, I just like to bring medication on board for a time, not forever, if we can help it, for a time when they get to an age where everybody in the family is frustrated.
There it is.
Right when there. Everybody in the family is frustrated because they're emotionally dysregulated all the time, or they can't remember anything, or they're always late, or, and the reason she went on to explain, the reason I say that is because if we don't catch it before that, then a whole identity forms and we have a whole other problem that we are then having to help deal with all throughout the rest of their life. And we have the chance to catch it when they're younger before it becomes their entire identity.
Yes.
And that resonated with me so much.
Can I just say amen?
Yes.
Amen. Yes.
Yes.
And that's so really the, I mean, that is the point. What are you doing? You're helping your kids. That's one of the ways you give them a leg up, is that when they're in adulthood, they don't have to undo so much of the things and some of your good wishes and desires to say, well, I don't want to give them a diagnosis. Like, well, yeah, but it's not even just about how you feel about that. A lot of the times, and I'm just going to say this because you can't talk back, whoever's listening, is that a lot of the times it's more about you than about them. That's about what that feels like to you to have a kid that might have something that's not what you expected, could have a different situation than you desired. And that's honestly, if you do a little digging, I would most of the time, you know, you see that that's also a huge part of how you feel about that. Mm-hmm. And you have to work through that, because it's really not how you feel about that. If you really do care and love for your kids, you're going to want to help them. So, 5 quick tools, and they're going to have to be quick, ladies, but that's only because we got a little bit of a time stamp today.
It has to be quick because I have a psychiatrist appointment with one of our kids.
Yeah. Okay. So the reason we only have, we're ending,
I can
not
be
even,
a little bit late,
we're not even ending, we're not ending me. The episode, but it's just to say, so parenting kids with ADHD, what are some tools? First, and these are going to be brief, but they need to be, and they're not actually very complicated. You have to take them and apply them to your situation. First is educate. You need to educate yourself, your kids, and your inner circle on what's going on. And your inner circle is important, because I think even with our family, there's that situation where we're always trying to explain our situation to the family so that they can know and how to love Birdie, as an example, or our kids, because maybe it's not straightforward like it is with any of the other kids. And so we try to educate ourselves. Elizabeth's great at that, and pushing our family, but also herself in that. And I think there's a massive win for our kids, because now we have language, and for us as a family, because we can know what's going on, and for our inner circle to know, so you're going to want to make eye contact and have a normal conversation with Birdie. That's not going to be happening. Mm-hmm. And don't worry, but here's what it can look like. And here's how you know here's what it looks like.
Connect with her.
To connect with her, it's going to look like this. Mm-hmm. So know if these things are happening, you're connecting more than you think.
And for those who don't know, Birdie has a lot of stuff, but she has autism and ADHD, which is an interesting combination. But the eye contact piece is related to autism, not ADHD.
Yeah, but it's just explaining constantly
and
that situation. So educating.
And while you're doing that, loop your parents in. Loop the grandparents in, because we so believe in the strength of generations following Jesus. And your parents, my generation, we got told things that seem to be right and relevant in the moment, but with the new brain science and imaging that came about, I don't know how many years ago, has been an explosion in understanding. So we have to recalibrate our view. We were of ADHD and how it works and what it is and what it isn't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if at all possible, loop the grandparents in. I mean, Elizabeth and Brooke, you've done a fabulous job of this, of us saying something and you patiently reframing it for us or bringing me into many of these appointments. Early appointments, I think, as much as your parents, be patient. It's hard sometimes for certain adults. It can be hard to change their mind. Doesn't mean they won't and that they can't. They just might need a little gentleness.
Absolutely. Yeah. The next thing, why don't you take the next one, honey?
Yeah, advocate.
It's a big one.
That is our role as the parents of our kids. You think about like the vulnerable. Our kids are vulnerable and they need advocacy. Mm-hmm. And as we are advocating for them and educating them about them, that advocacy, eventually we are training them to advocate for themselves. Mm-hmm. But it's a long time before they're able to do that. So that looks like advocating for what they need in schools. That's hard for a peacekeeper like myself to have to push for certain things, to ask for more in an IEP meeting or, but I just think of like what the Holy Spirit is for us. The Holy Spirit is an advocate. That is another name for the Holy Spirit, like advocating on our behalf. And we do that in all of our relationships, their relationships, advocating for different services, trying to understand what options there are for them. And for some who maybe if ADHD is really mild and not affecting them drastically, well, advocacy is going to look different versus the ones who it's really severe or it's a combination of dyslexia and ADHD or autism and ADHD. Your role as an advocate is going to have to be much more intense in those cases versus the more mild ones. But I think if we can teach our kids that they are fearfully and wonderfully made and how their brain works is not outside of that. They are fearfully and wonderfully made. And we need to teach them about what is happening so that they can advocate for themselves. So that if they're, say they've never used medication and they are in college and they need to make a choice of whether or not they're going to use that as a tool to help them get through college. Well, if they've had the education and they've watched you advocate for them, they're going to automatically, immediately know what to do, who to call, what they need to do to make that happen. And that is very much our role as their parents. It's our biblical role as their parents.
Yeah.
And then next, we, especially when they're young, need to build. We need to help build a scaffolding underneath them so that they can learn and grow and eventually build on that scaffolding themselves. I think that imagery is just really helpful. And we do that in all sorts of practical ways. And if you have kids with ADHD, you know exactly what I'm going to say. Routines and visual schedules and teaching them skills to be able to keep track of things like time and their stuff and deadlines. And it's going to look different at every age and stage. I'll just be really practical of what it looks like for us right now. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but beginning of last school year, we got a Skylight calendar, not really because I really wanted to use the calendar feature of it all that much. Actually, I still can't figure out how to link it with my Google Calendar. I just need to make a phone call, which you podcast listeners know I hate making. But mostly because there's options on there to be able to create like a list, a chore list and a task list, and to create a visual schedule that then my kids can go and check off the things that they've done. And it came kind of out of desperation because it felt like we're homeschooling many of them. There's so much going on. And it just felt like I was spending the whole morning just riding everybody to make their bed and brush their teeth and do the very basic things. Mm-hmm. But our kids respond really well when it's on a list and not just orders being shouted from me, which I used to think was like a defiance thing. Not having an understanding of what was happening and now understand, it's just wasn't sinking in.
Right.
But when it's visual and it's a part of their everyday consistent routine, literally the word said every morning is go do your Skylight. That's all I have to say versus having to follow them around, making sure they did every little thing that they're supposed to do that morning.
And we put us, what does it mean to clean up your room? That's in their room. What does it mean when we say clean up downstairs?
This there's a checklist. So, which might sound like, gosh, this is like militant and extreme, but the amount of tension that it has taken out, we have, and you don't need a fancy Skylight calendar to do any of this. You can use the internet and print lists and visual schedules, but like literally on the bathroom mirror, the girls' bathroom was a disaster all the time. And so we had somebody give us the idea of like, just put a checklist on the bathroom mirror with an Expo marker.
And they love it.
That bathroom has never stayed this picked up for this long because there's just a list that says towel and bath mat, clean up your clothes off the floor. Like, because they just need it as a reminder because they're not naturally going to remember. But those are the types of things that are building executive functioning skills in their life without, they're just a part of your everyday life. But they're going to take those skills as an adult to be able to manage all those things and not forget all the necessary things that they need to know.
So let me just take the last two. I'm going to take the last two because if not, you will not leave on time.
I know, but there's so much more to say here.
You were the one that I told you. I said, we've had this conversation. We can talk about this offline.
I actually realized.
No, stop.
I can leave a little late because we
got to finish this. But here's the point. But you're really right, though. The first one was educate. Second is advocate. Third is build. And then the fourth is coach. But I want to talk about four and five together. So coach and then celebrate strengths. Coaching as an idea is really helpful framework for that is not this way, but this way. Mm-hmm. So much. This morning, I can't remember exactly what it was. Yeah, Birdie, she walked in the room and she has this, she just doesn't recognize what's going on around her. She'll just walk in and start talking, like no matter what. And it's constantly like, oh, pause. Mom and I were talking, not that way, this way. You walk in and you say, excuse me. And so she's like, oh, okay, excuse me. And I was like, nope, not available yet. I'm still finishing this conversation with mom. And we make her stand there for a minute.
Yeah, because, on purpose, because we're trying to teach her. Yes.
Like,
very
you
hard
can't
for her to
just,
wait.
You know, walk in and demand that everyone's going to stop what they're doing because you weren't aware of the surroundings. You have to be aware of the surroundings. So it's not mean or by any means. No. It was just more of like, not this
training.
Way, this way.
It's training.
And so there's a coaching, there's a training, and coaching is not punishment. It's just like, hey, let's try this way. We are coaching our kid. I mean, that is so much of our situation.
And I think especially as your kids with ADHD, as they get older, you have less control over what tools they're going to choose to use versus not. If they're going to make lists and write things down, like I can't go make a list for my 17-year-old. I don't even know what entirely should be on it because he has a better grasp on school. He has to choose if he's going to use the organizational skills that we've taught him. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting as they get older because you're also like, you do have to allow room for them to not get it right and to not get a good grade because they didn't stay organized or to learn when to step in and help and when not. But I think that's where the coaching piece comes in, especially as they get older, is you're just continuing to coach. Right now with the younger two, we're doing it for them. Here's your Skylight calendar. It needs to be done by 8:45 in the morning. We're not doing that with our 17-year-old. It's here's your list of chores for the week. They need to be done by the weekend. Most of the time, he's doing all of them on Saturday morning because he didn't think to spread them out throughout the week. But so I think that coaching piece often comes as they get older. Yeah.
And then that last one, but I think it's important, is just celebrate those strengths. When they are really strong, speak to their strengths. Hey, you're really good at this. You're really good at paying attention to that. You're really amazing and hardworking at this. I mean, do not underestimate how insecure, how honestly their ADHD makes them feel insignificant at times. And so if we're highlighting maybe the things they're going to need help in, when you find those strengths, and there's many, name them and be really clear about it, because kids who have ADHD, they need parents who understand them, who believe in them, who advocate for them, encourage them, who help build them, their skills up, and refuse to let their struggles define them. I think we have to remember that. Like, their struggles are not what make them who they are. They help who they are. And you learn, all of us have struggles. So it's our job to help identify them and give them and encourage them. And so here's what I want to do for all of us, because I know that everyone is even in this podcast studio currently. I know we have so much more we could say, but I do want to actually say, if this has been helpful and you're interested in knowing more about this and you're like, hey, I'd love for some more content on this, email us, intentionalparents.org, find us on social media. We can do, you know, we can talk about this more in depth and from a lot of different angles, because again, not only is this our lived experience as parents, I know, Diane, this is your lived experience now in adulthood. This is my lived experience in adulthood, and we're constantly learning. So I know we have just a plethora of things.
Can I give one? We never give like homework. Can I give a piece of homework?
No, you can give a practice. No, no, no,
okay,
no, no,
practice.
No. Give
that's a practice
because no, because that's everyone's gonna immediately your homework and be like, absolutely not. Especially those with
okay.
ADHD.
Let's say give it a practice. A practice to try this week.
An invitation. You don't have to do it.
Yeah. Our kids with ADHD or suspected ADHD, they get corrected more often than kids who don't have it. And it can be the primary means of communication that we oftentimes have to use. Mm-hmm. And they are oftentimes starved for encouragement. Mm-hmm. And so to your point, Brooke, of celebrating their strengths, your practice, your invitation, homework, if you are a rule follower.
No, don't say that. They'll tune out immediately.
Go encourage your kids, ADHD or not.
Yeah.
Yes.
Turn this podcast off and
just
go
encourage your kids.
Yes. Tell them something that you see in them, something they're amazing at, a character quality mm-hmm. that you see in them. Just go tell them, yeah. And especially your kids with ADHD. Tell them way more often than you would naturally mm-hmm. think to. Set reminders. Give yourself the executive functioning skills to set reminders, make lists, mm-hmm. to remember to encourage them because they really, really need it.
Yes. Come back next week. Let us know if this has been helpful. Also, let us know if you want more of these episodes. See you soon.